Call the House Committee on Judiciary to order April 20th, Wednesday, 2011. We are going to, as usual, move a few things around so that you know ahead of time. House Bill 2673, 2674, 2675 will be with our evening meeting at 5:15. House Bill 3104 will be carried forward. And also House Bill 3295.
Carried forward till
this evening.
Tonight.
Once we've got 2701, 3104, and 3295 will go till tomorrow. The first ones I did, 2673, 2674, 2675, will go to this evening.
Mr. Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on today's bills without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand at this time.
Chair Barker has moved that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on our bills today without having the fiscal impact revenue impact statements on hand at this time. Those are the opinion that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking action on the bills we have today without having the fiscal impact and revenue impact statements on hand. At this time, we'll say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carries. The rules have been suspended, and we'll send them to where we need to when we get them as they come up. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2663.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2663 is actually all that matters is the amendment. The Dash 1 amendment completely replaces the bill. It retains some of the contents of what you may remember as House Bill 3481, which was a bill sponsored by Steve Dole, who I think will appear on this one as well, which makes modifications to various portions of the victims' rights section of the Constitution. What survives here are two different aspects of that bill. First of all, a modification to the obligations of a district attorney to consult with a crime victim prior to entering into a final plea, and reporting requirements that must be made by the DA upon entering into a plea sentencing or judicial settlement conference. And secondly, an extension of the period given crime victims to claim either a challenge of release decision on a defendant in the case in which they are the victim, or a violation of the victim's rights portion of the Oregon Constitution from 7 days to 30 days.
We have Gail Meyer, Doug Beloff, and Steve Dole come up, please. Realize we have a lot of work to do, somewhere between 30 seconds and
Chair Krieger, Co-Chair Barker, members of the committee, Steve Dole, Crime Victims United. I just want to say very briefly that this did start out as 3481. Some of you actually were, the two chairs were signed as co-sponsors of the bill. Others of you had signed on to the bill. We appreciate that. What we found is, as things moved along, is there was controversial parts of the bill. So we have stripped out all of those parts except for the three that are going to be presented today and work on them through the interim. And so we really appreciate the hard work of Josh Nasby and Aaron Knott. And I'll let my colleagues take it from there. Thanks very much.
We thought we'd give you an exciting moment that Gail Meyer and I were testifying on the same bill in favor of it. So we have stripped the controversial provisions of this bill. Gail and I have an agenda between sessions to work on some of the more controversial issues. And what is before you, I am unaware of any opposition to these sections. Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Doug Ballouf, law professor at Lewis and Clark College. Chair Barker, Chair Krieger. So I'm unaware of any opposition to these sections of the bill.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. OCDLA does support the idea that crime victims on violent felonies deserve information in a timely way. This bill furthers that goal. It does not adversely impact due process rights of the accused, and we think it's a good bill.
Questions, committee?
63-1.
Mr. Chair, can you guys just testify on the rest of the bills, too?
It'd be nice.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Work session on House Bill 2663.
Mr. Chair, I move Dash 1 amendments in House Bill 2663.
Co-Chair Barker moves the Dash 1 amendments in House Bill 2663. Any discussion? Objections?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2663 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Co-Chair Barker moves House Bill 2663 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Let me speak to that just briefly. And co-chairs and members of the committee, it was noted that the previous version of this bill did have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. That, of course, would have been contingent on the content of the bill, which no longer exists. And I'll also note for the record that this amendment came in late enough that fiscal did not have time to respond. There is no fiscal impact statement prepared at this time.
Yes.
Not having studied the details of the amendment, I'm assuming that we're expecting it to be the fiscal to be de minimis. So if it turns out to be otherwise, there may be
we have a letter from the leadership that the bills can be moved here without a fiscal to the floor, and the fiscal will catch up. And they go to the side first, and they go to Ways and Means.
And that's my only point, that I'm happy to support the bill and anticipate that it will probably have a de minimis fiscal, but if that's otherwise, it may mean that it should go from the floor to Ways and Means.
Gotcha. Absolutely.
Gotcha.
We're ready to call the roll. Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Wong.
Aye.
Representative Wisnant. Representative Wisnant, yes.
Aye. Yes.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
Carry. Okay, House Bill 2663 has amended before. Barker will carry it.
Yeah, I'll just give a brief statement.
Okay, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3324.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3324. Would require individuals who are convicted of DUI in association with another crime, a murder, manslaughter in first or second degree, criminally negligent homicide, assault in the first degree, or aggravated vehicular homicide, or somebody who has been lifetime revoked for DUI but was later restored, will be required to have an interlock device, an ignition interlock device in their car for 5 years. Following the date of that conviction or the release from prison. There is an amendment to this bill. This is the Dash 3 amendment. The Dash 3 amendment inserts language about how this bill will ultimately be funded. Relevant is Section 3. A person shall pay a fee of $50 to the Department of Transportation for deposit into the Ignition Interlock Program Fund, which would be established and subsequently established within that section. And that $50 fee is mandatory before a person's driving privileges can be reinstated, before they can receive a hardship permit. And then finally, Section 4 establishes the existence of the Ignition Interlock Program Fund within the state's treasury, separate and distinct from the general fund, consisting entirely of the monies deposited into that fund from the $50 fee. Similarly here, the Dash 3 amendment does not have a prepared fiscal impact statement.
Yeah. Ann, can you come up a minute and give us just a few words, please?
For the record, my name is Ann Pratt. I'm a member of Mothers Against Drunk Driving. I will try and keep this to just 1 minute as requested. The purpose of this fund is to charge $50 to be paid by the offender at DMV at the time of reinstatement after the suspension or revocation period is over for those who are required to install an ignition interlock. I do want to mention that those on diversion are exempt from this. What it would do is it would establish a fund that would be used to offset current and future legislative costs, ID related expenses such as programming, implementing current and future ID legislation, and maintaining the current programs and other administrative costs. The current legislation, of course, we'd like to cover is House Bill 3324, and also possibly a Senate bill that closes the loophole and lets offenders just wait out the requirement. The fund would allow Oregon to continue to improve and maintain our current IID system, and at this point it's nearly impossible to move and improve it without finding a way to fund it. Other states routinely use administrative costs. I hope that you all received my email. I gave you a sheet, sent you a sheet with other states who have administrative costs. The one that I'm going to point out is the one closest to us. Washington charges $100 for an ignition interlock driver's license, plus a $20 a month fee, plus $150 for reinstatement once that period is over. In closing, I'd just like to say that let's not forget the cost of impaired driving in Oregon, and that each death is $1.2 million, and it totals $219 million per year. And a $50 minimal fee isn't too much to ask for this devastation and grief that these offenders cause Oregonians. Please pass 3324 with the dash threes. Thank you very much.
Any committee members, any questions?
Mr. Chair, I move the dash threes to House Bill 3324.
We're still in the public
hearing. Yeah, we're in the work session.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash threes to House Bill 3324.
Richard Barker has moved the dash threes in the House Bill 3324. Any objections to the amendments or discussion? None of the amendments are in.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3324 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Richard Barker has moved House Bill 3324 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Any discussion on the bill? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan.
We're going to skip down to 2014, open a work session on 2014.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2014 requires registered nurses to report evidence of abuse and certain injuries to a medical examiner. This would be add them into a category that already includes physicians, interns, and residents. There is a Dash 1 amendment. Dash 1 modifies only line 13 of House Bill 2014. That modification is that it deletes the medical examiner as the person to which the report in writing must be made and inserts an appropriate law enforcement agency. As amended, House Bill 2014 is expected to have a minimum fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2014.
Co-Chair Barker has moved the Dash 1s into House Bill 2014. Any discussion on the amendments? Objections? Okay, the amendments are...
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2014 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 2014 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Any discussion on the bill? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Wong.
Aye.
Representative Wisman.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye. House Bill 2014 will pass the floor as amended.
Not to carry. Representative Wisman would love to carry this.
Open a work session on House Bill 2183.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2183 in its introductory version would create the crime of making a false report of child abuse punishable by a maximum of 1 year imprisonment, $6,250 fine or both. A Dash 2 amendment has been advanced for consideration. The effect of the Dash 2 amendment would be to modify subsection 2 of section 2. Making a false report of child abuse would no longer be a Class A misdemeanor, but rather a Class A violation. The Dash 2 amendment has not received a fiscal analysis.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2s into House Bill 2183.
Move the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2183. Discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Garrett?
I just want to thank you for being willing to acknowledge the concerns that came up yesterday. I'm happy to support this bill with the Dash 2. I think it makes the policy choice we want to make while creating parity between intentional false reports and failures to report. So thank you again for being willing to make that accommodation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to battle against the compromise, and I appreciate that we'll have a bill now that can get widespread support. But I do want to express my concern that when you're dealing with instances of people that take a tremendous amount of public resources that we have devoted to protecting children, and they abuse them for their own purposes, and they make an intentionally, knowingly false report, that is a very serious crime. It abuses the system that we've created. It takes our tax dollars and uses them for a private, improper purpose. I think that the original bill was just fine. But like I said, I'm not going to fight against a compromise. I respect my colleagues' concerns, but that's where I was coming from on the bill.
Hicks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and indeed, I support and appreciate the compromise. I do want to just point out, though, that what we have done, indeed, by dropping it from a crime to a violation, is lowered the burden of proof from beyond a reasonable doubt to now drawing a blank. It's to the other one that I never deal with.
Preponderance.
Preponderance. Thank you.
Hey,
non-attorney. I know, boy. Ooh. But we've lowered that. Now it's got to be more likely than not. We've removed, of course, the jury right. That's not something people are going to have available to them when charged with this violation. Additionally, we've treaded into somewhat unprecedented waters in terms of from the get-go, making a crime with an identifiable victim a violation. Typically, a violation is speeding, something that is against the state. And now we have a crime that is invariably going to have, I think, a victim in almost in virtually every case, the accused, falsely accused person, in other words. And now, in the event that it does go to the courts, I don't know that we'll have a lesser obligation upon the state to prove it, but perhaps a lesser interest in actually pursuing the case. So I do want to put those out there. It wasn't that I'm wanting to zing these people particularly, and that's why I would say crime would be my first choice, but I do support the compromise. Thank you for your efforts on these matters.
I think sometimes when this happens, we discussed yesterday, it happens during high-tension times during divorces, and people do and say things they shouldn't that actually years later they, you know, reconcile those differences and recognize they've done something wrong, so we'll see how it works out for a while. Okay, any more discussion on the bill? We have the amendments in.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2183 as amended to the floor to do pass.
Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 2183 as amended to the floor to do pass. Any more discussion on the bill? Okay, thank you. Call the roll.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Chopler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Wong.
Aye.
Representative Wisman.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hitt.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye. House Bill 2183, as amended, go to the floor to do pass. We'll carry it. Okay, we'll open a work session on House Bill 2650.
And co-chairs, members of the committee, 2650 pertains to Oregon Health Authority and the Department of Human Services developing systems to run quarterly criminal records checks on healthcare victims. The proponents of this bill advance it on the theory that right now everybody is performing these checks, and that's inherently inefficient. The amendments to be considered are the Dash 3 amendments, which, can I ask, is there anybody here on 2650? Yeah, I thought so. Which just came in.
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Fawn McNeely, and I'm here representing the Oregon Association for Home Care. The Dash 3 amendments for House Bill 2650 would remove the original bill and replace it with amendments that allow home health agencies and in-home care agencies to continue the process they use today in relation to criminal background checks. It removes the requirement these agencies have checks performed by the background check unit of DHS. Other entities that are required to perform background checks under the BCU are regulated by DHS, while home health agencies and in-home care agencies are not. This legislation would still require these agencies to perform background checks, but would allow the checks to be done following current practices instead of under the background check unit.
Okay, committee,
thank you. So what is the current practice?
There was legislation passed last session that would have required us to have background checks done under the background check unit, but rules have not yet been implemented that allow that to happen. So currently we are performing background checks through private entities.
Follow-up? So your intention, though, is to follow the legislation that was passed last year as soon as rules are changed, is that correct?
Co-chairs and Representative Tomei, the legislation would actually allow us to continue to perform background checks separate from the background check unit.
Follow-up. So is the intention, though, eventually to follow the legislation that was passed last session, is that correct?
Co-chairs and Representative Tomei, we would... this legislation would allow us to be separate forever from the background check unit. We would still be required to meet the requirements of the laws that were enacted last session in relation to the crimes that are committed, but we would perform the check separate from the background check unit.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 2650.
Co-Chair Barker has moved the Dash 3 amendments into House Bill 2650.
Allow me to interject here, co-chairs, members of the committee. As amended by the Dash 3 amendments, 2650 was the recipient of a fiscal impact statement. However, that just clarified that the amendment requires home health agencies to complete a criminal records check. The bill is anticipated to have no fiscal impact to either OHA or DHS. Under current practice, both agencies complete criminal records checks on individuals paid by home health and in-home care agencies.
Okay. Any objections to the amendments? Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2650 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 2650 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Any discussion on the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm not going to object to the bill, and I appreciate the fiscal, but it is a bit, it should raise a little bit of a red flag that we are creating a proliferation of different systems for doing essentially a very similar activity. And ultimately, I mean, one time that doesn't cost much money and it's paid for by fees provided by the applicants, but it creates a disjointed system. It undermines the smooth operation and the integrity of our data systems. And we should just be mindful of that.
I think that is something we need to watch. I agree with you. Because everybody could continue to come forward with a system that exempts them and develop their own, and pretty soon, as you say, it's disjointed. We'd like to move this bill anyway today.
Anything I hear that message.
Call the roll.
Representative Nolan.
Okay, yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative
Chopper. Aye. Representative Tomei. Aye. Representative Wong. Representative Wisman. Aye. Co-Vice
Chair
Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Gary.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
House Bill 2650 with the Dash 3 moves the floor with the due pass. Anyone like to carry
I'll
it?
Carry it.
Andy will carry it. Thank you, Andy. Okay, we're going to go back to House Bill 2461. We'll open a work session on that.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2461 would remove the existing prohibition on using public funds to pay for direct care, health care, provided by a person with a prior conviction for theft in the first degree. You may recall there was extensive testimony, and it came to you from Representative Gelser, that this was barring individuals from working in health care. There is an amendment in the current version of the bill, and this is the dash ones, at line 30, subsection F refers to a crime imposed with the upward departure factor of a finding that the victim is vulnerable. That has been removed by this amendment. I can tell you that the reason that was removed was a concern that that upward departure factor is actually only meant to apply to victims of assault. So it's not meant to be a comment otherwise on the bill. 2461 does not presently have a fiscal impact statement returned. We need the dash
ones. Mr. Chair, I move the dash ones into House Bill 2461.
Co-Chair Barker has moved the dash one amendments into House Bill 2461. Any discussion on the amendments or objections?
Mr. Chair? And may I, I'm sorry, could counsel address again regarding the enhancement factor? Because I looked carefully at that particular section of the bill. What was particular about it? It's only the assault enhancement factor?
Co-chairs, Representative Hicks, there was discussion between myself, Representative Gelser, and Legislative Counsel on this after the public hearing, because there was concern that, as you know, there are a range of upward departure factors that are available in criminal cases, but they're sort of sliced in different directions. This particular one, finding a victim vulnerability, links back to assault cases and assault type cases. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be applicable on these facts.
Okay.
Well, may I follow up one? Is there anything in the amended version of the bill that addresses enhancement factors that do apply to property crimes?
co-chair is Representative Hicks.
Or would there need to be, yeah.
No, this removes a prohibition of receiving public funds for a finding of conviction of theft one, regardless of the presence of any enhancement factor.
Okay, thank you.
Any other discussion on the amendments? Representative Wong.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So, Mr. Knott, just so that I have a good fresh recollection, the type of direct care we're talking about in this bill includes what universe?
Co-chairs, Representative Wand, just looking at the text itself, this would apply to primary home care.
If I may,
in care, health agencies, peer support specialists.
Where this came up, Representative, was a case where somebody was taking care of their family member and being paid as that, and it was discovered that in their youth they'd committed a felony, and so that automatically excluded them, so they were going to have to not be able to care for their family member. This is an exception, allows an exception, it doesn't mandate it.
All right. Thank you for that clarification.
And Co-Chair's Representative Wan, I would add, just because I didn't mention it earlier, this does, I believe, include employees of residential facilities and foster homes. No, we do not have the amendment in here.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that the dash 4 is in House Bill 2461.
Dash 1. Dash
I'm sorry, dash 1. Into the House
Bill. Dash 1 has been moved into House Bill 2461. Any more discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2461 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Speaker Barker has moved House Bill 2461 as amended to the floor with the due pass. Any discussion on the bill?
Representative Nolan.
Aye.
Representative
Olson. Aye.
Representative Chocolate.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative
Wong. Aye.
Representative Wisman.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
House Bill 2461 moves as amended, moves the floor with a due pass. Let's see if Representative Gelser wants to carry it.
2693.
Down to that one. Open a work session on House Bill 2693.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 2693 comes to us from the sheriff and sheriffs and pertains to the ability, the new requirement of an agency to record the issuance of a warrant with the county clerk in the county for which the sheriff serves. Presently, the sheriff is required to do that. Also provides that the sheriff's documentary record of return of service of a warrant would not be considered hearsay in either criminal or civil. There is a dash one amendment, and I believe there is somebody present who's available to speak on it.
Co-Chair Barker, Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee, my name is John C. Powell, representing the Oregon State Sheriff's Association in support of House Bill 2693. And as Mr. Knott explained, currently, if the Department of Transportation is owed money and wants to issue a warrant under their seal, they have to send that warrant to the sheriff. The sheriff receives it, simply opens the envelope, takes out the warrant, puts it in the sheriff's envelope, and sends it to the county clerk. This eliminates the sheriff in the process, so the Department of Transportation, in the example, would send their warrant directly to the county clerk. They would then no longer have to pay the sheriff $6.25 each time they send these warrants, and the sheriffs will no longer have to do the work, so it should save both the state and the county the money, as the $6.25 doesn't cover the cost to the sheriff. And what the amendments do are just clarify language with the Department of Revenue, ODOT, and the Oregon Employment Department to make sure that the language in this bill does not conflict with the language of House Bill 3261, which I believe passed out of the House Revenue Committee. Deals with a similar thing, but under ODOT's discretion.
Okay, any questions?
Department who signed off on that.
BOR and
our co-chairs, Representative Nolan, are you asking if they're here or if they're okay with the language?
I'm asking either the witness or counsel whether we have any communication from them that they've reviewed this and that the language works in the way intended and they're okay with it.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Co-chairs, Representative Nolan, the Sheriff's Civil Command worked with the Department of Revenue and Legislative Council on crafting the language.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1s to House Bill 2693. Co-Chair Barker has moved the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2693. Any discussion on the amendments? Objections? Amendments are in. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2693 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 2693 as amended to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion on the bill? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Excuse, there he is.
Representative Olson.
Hi.
Representative Joplin. Aye. Representative Tillman. Aye. Representative Wong. Aye. Representative Lindman. Aye. Co-Vice Chair Hicks. Aye. Co-Vice Chair Garrett. Aye. Co-Chair Krieger. Aye. Co-Chair Barker. Aye. Okay, House Bill
2693
as amended moves to the floor with a due pass. Anyone like to carry it?
I'm sure Representative Olson does.
Oh, yeah. He's got his hands full, I think. Reg Tomei, would you do it, please? Thank you. Open a work session on House Bill 3186.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 3186 makes modification to the existing prohibition against using a mobile communication device while operating a motor vehicle. What is being modified is essentially the existing scope of the exception for doing it in the course of your employment. That would go away in its current form and would be replaced by a series of exceptions. There's a Dash 4 amendment. That Dash 4 amendment details what the proponents of the bill have in mind, where they've come to rest. This would prohibit, or the exception, rather, would exist for individuals who activate or deactivate a mobile communication device, for people who are summoning medical help using mobile communication devices for the purposes of farming and agricultural operations, operating an ambulance or emergency vehicle, who is 18 years of older and using a hands-free accessory, is operating a motor vehicle while providing public safety services, is operating a motor vehicle while acting in the scope of their employment as a public safety officer, is operating a tow vehicle or roadside assistance vehicle, holds a valid amateur radio operator license, or similar, issued by the FCC, is operating a two-way radio device that transmits radio communication transmitted by a station operating on an authorized frequency for family radio citizens or family radio service bands, is operating a vehicle owned or contracted by a utility for the purposes of maintaining that utility, including but not limited to natural gas, electricity, water, telecommunications, is using it for one-way communication while operating a motor vehicle in the scope of their employment, providing transit services, participating in public safety, emergency service activities, and this would be a Class D traffic violation. Now, a distinction that may have gotten lost there is that you actually have to be operating the motor vehicle for that exception to take place, if you're and fulfilling that exception, which was ambiguous in the prior statute. For example, if you work for a utility but you're not talking on the phone in service of that utility function, this exception would no longer apply. As amended by the Dash 4s, House Bill 3186 is expected to have a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact. We do need to adopt
it. You have no exception for legislators.
None.
Dark.
Carefully considered.
Thank you. That's good news.
Yeah, we want to put Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 4 amendments into House Bill 3186. Co-Chair Barker has moved the Dash 4 amendments into House Bill 3186. There probably is some discussion on the amendments.
Oh, if I may. I was the chief proponent, I think, of the original cell phone bill 2 years ago, and we heard from police officers often that it was hard to figure out who was exempted and who was not. So Representative Berger has worked really hard, and I think Senator Brzozinski is working hard on this bill to meet with the stakeholders to make sure this included the people who should be included and excluded the rest of us. So I would be very supportive of this amendment.
I think also the technology of the day and all these different handheld devices that I can't even name them, let alone use them. You know, we're doing the best we can, I think, and trying to promote public safety.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I just would say in the attention of the Court of Appeals, what this is to stop people from using what we today call a cell phone, what I don't know what they'll call it this afternoon or tomorrow, the new names, unless they're actually engaged in the work out of that vehicle for the purpose. But this is to take care of the problem we have today where a police officer stops somebody talking on the phone and they say, I'm working. And there's no way of knowing. And what we want to do is make the road safer, and that is the intent of this bill.
Any other discussion on the amendments? Okay, the amendments are in.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3186 as amended to the floor with a due pass.
Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 3186 with a dash four to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion on the bill? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Chocolate.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative Wong.
Aye.
Representative Woodson.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Hicks. Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
May I carry it, Mr. Chair?
House Bill 3186 as amended. Move to the floor. If you pass, then you may carry it.
Thank you.
Cheyenne, do you want to come over here?
Either one, Mr. Chair.
Or you can do it from there if you want.
I can do it from here. Thank
you, Mr.
Chair.
We're going to then open a... we haven't got Representative Thatcher yet, have we?
Yeah.
Oh, there she is. She's hiding.
Yeah. Blending in with the wallpaper.
We're going to do a hiding board first. Of it. We're going to open a work session then on House Bill 2791. And I would like to have the state police come up and talk to us a little bit about the bill. Representative Thatcher, I'll probably have you come up afterwards if you like.
Co-Chairs Barker and Krieger and honorable members of the committee, for the record, David Yandell, Director of the Criminal Justice Information Services Division for the Oregon State Police. I'd like to put on the record right up front that our department has taken a neutral position on House Bill 2791. We also support the governor's balanced budget, which touches on this particular program. But I'm here to answer any specific questions that you may have in relationship to some of the concerns that you heard about yesterday and some of the questions that the committee members had.
Okay, committee members.
Mr. Chair, could you elaborate then on the status of providing mental health database access to the feds?
Co-Chair Krieger, Representative Hicks, as you, some of you may recall, last legislative session, the legislature was approached with an issue that we experienced in the state of Oregon not being in full compliance with the Nix Improvement Amendments Act, which became federal law in January of 2008. Subsequent to the proposed legislation, which was House Bill 2853, state agencies who hold records of those individuals who have been adjudicated as not being able to possess or purchase a firearm, specifically that's the Oregon Health Authority, the Psychiatric Security Review Board, and the state courts. Those agencies were directed under 2853 to provide the state police with the minimal information on those individuals for further submission to the FBI's National Instant Check System. That work is underway. Technologically, we are literally within weeks of being able to provide a first dump of that information to NICS. But it is factual that today the National Instant Check System does not have access to the mental health records of those individuals in Oregon who are prohibited from purchasing or possessing a firearm. We obtained that information direct under the previous statutes that were passed by the legislature in past legislative sessions from DHS or the Oregon Health Authority, and it's that information that we're working to get into NICS just as soon as possible. As I said before, that work is underway and will be completed shortly.
Anybody else? Mr. Gandil, so by the time, assuming this bill takes a normal course of events, by the time it would be passed and signed by the governor, that information would be forwarded to the NICS?
Co-Chair Barker, it would certainly be our hope that information would be available by or before the first of this coming year, depending on when such a change might take place.
Okay, thank you.
David, yesterday during our testimony, we heard a little bit of concern about the time delay versus what the National Information and Crime System and what state police provide. Could you just expound a little bit and share the service mindset and just exactly a little bit what you do with that unit?
Co-chairs and Representative Olson, to give you a little bit of perspective, last calendar year, 2010, we processed 168,000 background checks through the firearms unit. We have 18 staff members who are employed by the department to man the unit. 2,488 of those transactions were denied. That's 1.4% of the total call volume of those individuals that were denied. The state law requires that the unit be operational between the hours of 8 a.m. and 10 p.m., 7 days a week, 363 days a year, and to accomplish that, it requires 9 of those 18 positions. If we never received a call, it would require those 9 individuals just to man the phone during that period. The call volume that is representative of the point of contact responsibilities is where the additional 9 FTE come in, so it's workload related. 96% of our calls are disposed of within 3 to 5 minutes of the call being received. The problem that we're having and that the individuals who have testified are concerned about, and understandably, is that the call volume has spiked within the last 6 months significantly, and this is not just unique to Oregon, it's nationwide. And I'll give you an example of what we're faced with. The first week of January, January the 2nd through January the 8th, we experienced 3,138 calls. That's for the week. That's transactions, background checks for that particular week. I'm not going to give you the specific week, but I'll read through the subsequent weeks to the current to give you an idea of what we've experienced. We started at 3,138, went to 3,371, 3,166, 3,426, 4,361, 4,674, 4,327, 4,214, 4,613, 4,386, bringing us up to the current period, 4,357, 4,077, 4,135, and last week we experienced 4,346 for the week. The same week last year, that's 1,034 calls more than what we experienced last year for the same period. So our call volume has spiked significantly. The complaints that we're receiving are an issue that we're working diligently to resolve, and I'll cover that in just a moment. But if we have an example, the way we manned those 18 positions, and they're essentially scheduled based on days of the week, which is based on anticipated volumes. We have 14 of the 18 scheduled to work on Saturdays, 9 on Sundays, 10 on Mondays, 12 on Tuesdays, 11 on Wednesdays, 12 on Thursdays, and 12 on Fridays. As I'm sure you understand, we have to give our folks time off. They're entitled to their leave. So that's why we don't have the full 18 on. But when we have a major event, we do schedule maximum number of staff members to accommodate the anticipated workload. But if we only have 11 call takers on and we receive a spike of calls, unfortunately, we're experiencing periods where those individuals that call, dealers in particular, that call to receive a background check, are getting busy or not able to actually enter into the system until we have a call taker that's free. Now, what we're doing to address that as we speak, we're in the process of installing a new automatic call distributor, which will assist us in giving us the tools that we need to manage those call volumes better. The reality is, though, if we've got only 9 call takers on and they've got 9 calls they're working on, if somebody else calls in and we don't have additional staff there to take up the slack, they're going to have to wait. And we feel bad about that, but it's the reality of the business. Much the way a dispatch center has to deal with some of the same conflicts, if you will. We are also in the process of installing e-check, which is an electronic means of allowing the dealers to actually do the checks themselves. That is due to be tested the week of May the 16th, and we're focused on having that fully operational before the end of this biennium. We started the efforts to replace the ACD and to implement e-check as soon as we started to experience some of these unanticipated increases in the call volume that we're experiencing. And as I mentioned before, Oregon's not unique. These are transaction increases that are being experienced in other states and with the FBI as well.
Dave, if you had the e-check in place, the person does it themselves, the dealer, does the state still get a fee?
Co-Chair Krieger, that is actually a question I'm not sure I know the answer to off the top of my head. I believe, and we'll clarify that and get back to you right away with the answer to the question.
Okay. Any further questions, Andy?
Yeah. Actually, well, I'll wait till we get to the point. I want to say something, so I'll wait.
So the proposal is we go to the federal NICS system where there is no charge to the citizen trying to purchase a gun. Would it not save the state money to go ahead and do that so you don't have to put in your instant check and all these other things, and then the question of a fee would be gone for the purchaser?
Co-Chair Barker, if the issue is whether you go to the FBI and get the check for free or you retain the Oregon program, we can't compete with that, and we're not attempting to. We have no choice but to recover our costs, as I'm sure all of you are fully aware of. Our department is currently expected to recover all of the services that we provided ID services through fees. So a nuance that we are dealing with is the reality that our core services, which historically has been paid for through the state general fund, it's not going to be paid for, at least through the general fund, any longer, and we have no other choice but to recover those costs through fees. That is what has caused the proposed increase in our fees for all of our services, not just the background check for a firearms check.
Okay, thank you very much.
So how is the FBI funded, those who do the check, background check?
Co-chairs and Representative Tomei, the FBI program is funded through taxpayer contributions.
Through all of our tax funding.
That is correct.
So eventually we pay for FBI to do this also, correct?
That is correct. And they have shared with us in the past I believe the last time that we had a conversation with the National Instant Check System in April of 2009, they estimated that they would require at least 9 positions that they would have to hire to do these background checks, and that about $1.2 million a year increase in their budget. And they are aware that this legislation is being considered. Our recent attempts to get current estimates of the cost to the federal government, they're not willing to provide any estimates off the cuff yet until they actually do an analysis of our workload and some of our transaction history over the last 2 to 3 years.
I guess I just want to make clear, Mr. Chair, that this is not something free. We're actually paying for this. We may be paying it through our federal taxes, but we are paying. And if the service stays in Oregon, we would be providing Oregon jobs. Is that correct? Am I correct in assuming that? If it stays, that state police continues to do these background checks, it would be Oregon people who would be employed here. Is that correct?
I believe when I was talking to Dave this morning, those people have to stay there to do the rest of the core functions. So they're not, my understanding, Dave, that they're not in addition to because of the program.
Co-Chair Krieger, again, the ID services program today consists of 73 positions. Our core services, which is the maintenance of the state's criminal history system and our automated fingerprint identification system. And again, I think all of you presumably understand that our criminal history system in Oregon is based on fingerprints. So those two component parts are essential to provide all of the background services that we provide and are required to charge a fee for. The core services, again, criminal history and APHIS, is what has previously been paid for via the state general fund. But in light of the economic crisis that we're having, a current direction is that we pick up those costs through fees for service. So that is what has generated the discussion about up to a $26 charge for background checks for firearm sales.
Further questions? Mr. Olson, you want to speak now?
Well, I don't know what your intents are with this bill. I mean, moving forward with this, I'm thinking that actually it should probably be moved down to Ways and Means right now, because you're taking a look at a reduction of personnel, FTE, the potential there that exists, but then also a change in direction too for us here right now, which is going to have impact as well. That's just something I'm throwing out there.
Chairs and members of the committee, if I could interrupt, we've just received the permission letter. If the committee's intent is to add a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, that was recommended by Legislative Fiscal Office.
Mr. Chair, my only comments would be we're paying already for the federal service. The gun buyer in Oregon would have to pay an additional $26 or $28 a day, currently pay $10. There is no cost if we go through the federal system. And Oregon won't need to buy some of the updated equipment for the instant check kind of things. I believe we could see some savings there. And just for the sportsmen or target shooters in Oregon, it just seems to me that it would make sense at this time to move that function over to the NICS system.
Any other discussion on the bill?
Just a clarification, Mr. Co-Chair. There's been a proposal for changes to fees, but it hasn't been adopted yet.
You should know. Wasn't that part of the assumptions in the governor's budget?
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, and many assumptions that are in the governor's balanced budget will not end up in the legislatively adopted budget. I can't tell you which ones will and which ones won't, but we're sorting all of that out.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2791 to Ways and Means with a due pass.
The co-chair Barker moved House Bill 2791 to Ways and Means with a due pass. Any more discussion on the bill?
Do you have any amendments or no?
No.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure if you did, you put them in here.
Just registering an objection. I think it's safe to move this one to the floor as is, with the amended piece added. And I think the co-chair articulated the reasons as well.
Ways and Means. Can you talk to us one more time of the information you got about going to Ways and Means?
When Mr. Chairs and members of the committee, the requests were made with both fiscal and revenue in order to try to work the bill, if that's what the committee intended, and they responded with a recommendation that it be sent to Ways and Means because of the impact, potential impact on a stream of funds that currently go to the Department of State Police. If they no longer are responsible for doing the checks, those funds disappear, and because it'll be through NICS instead. That's what their recommendation is based on, that potential impact.
If there's
impact.
A revenue impact, even if it went to the floor first, it would end up in Ways and Means, so if sending it there now is where it's going to end up. Would have ended up originally, you know, anyway, after it left the floor before it went to the Senate.
I'm not certain about the process leaving here, but it's at the chair's discretion, and if the committee so votes, it does not now have a subsequent referral, and you may vote to move it to the floor. It has permission. If you desire to move it to Ways and Means now, you've obtained the permission to do that. But it's in the chair's and the discretion with the votes of the committee.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll change my motion to move House Bill 2791 to the floor with a due pass.
Okay. Stand in these. Don't have more than three of your fours in there. Representative Barker has changed his motion to send the bill to the floor with a due pass. Any more discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm I would have been, it might ultimately end up in Ways and Means, I don't know. But I would have supported that. I'm going to be a no at this time for going to the floor. So let's leave it at that.
Okay.
Thank you. I think it's been made clear, at least from my point of view, that we are going to pay for these checks anyway. And I would just, I'd rather keep the checks being done in Oregon and have them done by Oregon people. So I'll be voting no on this also.
Mr. Chair, just to reiterate, we've already paid the federal government. I just did my electronics check here a couple days ago. And I've paid for these, and as a gun owner and possibly future purchaser, I would like to not have to pay additional fees that I've already paid for to the federal government that we can get for no charge, no additional charge. Thank you.
Representative Wong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm perplexed by a recommendation to send this to Ways and Means, and that's why I support sending it to the floor, because I can't imagine how not performing a function at the state level and thereby not receiving a fee would somehow impact us to such a great extent that it would have to go through Ways and Means. We're not doing something anymore. We're letting the federal government do it, which we already pay for. Therefore, we should either send it to the floor or not, and I don't think it needs to go to Ways and Means. So I'm supporting the motion.
Mr. Co-Chair, my good friend from Albany has persuaded me, and I'm following his lead.
Okay.
Scared now.
It's not contagious, don't worry.
Any further discussion on the motion? Call the roll.
Representative Nolan.
No.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Stoppler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
No.
Representative Wong.
Aye.
Representative Whitman.
Excused.
Excused.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Excuse me, man. I missed the...
He's in Canada.
I know that. What were the votes there? I missed the votes.
Yeah.
They were making noise over here.
Representative Nolan, nay. Representative Olson, nay. Representative Schaffler, aye. Representative Tomei, nay. Representative Wong, aye. Representative Woodman, excused. Co-Vice Chair Hicks, aye. Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
All right. Since I think I know how Representative Wisden would have voted had he been here, I will courtesy vote this out with a yes, although I expect to be a no on the floor.
Appreciate that.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
That's six votes for yes, right? Make sure I've got it right.
Correct.
House Bill... Where are we at? 2791. Moving on the floor with the due pass. And, Barker, you want to carry that?
Sure.
I think we're. Representative Thatcher.
And Representative Thatcher together. We'll carry it. On House Bill 3186, where Representative Tomei is calling that, is carrying that, and you wanted to have Representative Berger co-carry that with you, please, that'd be fine.
Thank you.
That's where we at now. We're going to go back to... want to do, might as well start at the top. Okay, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2653.
Chairs and members of the committee, House Bill 2653 was previously heard on April the 5th. It allows the Department of Revenue to collect judgments that are ordered by justice courts in criminal cases, and there is a Dash 1 amendment that limits the use of the Department of Revenue's collections unit to monies that are of state interest, that affect state revenues or that affect state revenues. It also requires a report from the justice courts on their collections. on the dash ones. A revenue statement has issued and may have a fiscal impact, but no statement has yet issued, and it has a subsequent referral to revenue.
Okay. And that's a dash one?
That's correct. Has yet to be moved into the bill.
Mr. Chair, move the dash ones in House Bill 2653.
Chair Barker has moved the dash one amendments into House Bill 2653. Any more discussion on the amendments or objections to the amendments?
Which amendment?
Dash one.
Dash one. Okay, the amendments are in.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2653 to revenue.
Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 2653 as amended to revenue. Any more discussion on the bill? You're thinking, Representative Nolan, that's dangerous.
Wow.
You're making an attempt to think. That's what I do.
So maybe
over here.
Someone can explain this referral to a different committee and not the previous one?
Maybe they can. I don't know.
This was.
I think it was your motion.
It was.
Co-Chair, maybe you'll explain it to me.
This one's going down to revenue, and I don't see any reason to send that one to the floor first.
Oh, why didn't I think of that?
Want me to explain that? He's co-chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I do see a distinction here. This bill probably ought to go to Ways and Means, actually. This, I think, actually does expand a government obligation at the state level. The Department of Revenue is now incurring additional requirements, and there is potentially a fiscal impact to that versus the last bill arguably was shrinking the government's obligations. Thereby, Ways and Means would be the less appropriate destination.
Okay, we have the dash one.
My good friend from Albany has convinced me on this one as well, then.
Oh, wow.
Bill will be going down to revenue.
With one objection.
How many? One objection?
Yeah.
One. One objection.
You ought to go to the floor.
I missed your objection.
Two objections.
In that case, I'll object. I think it should go to Ways and Means. But I'll vote for it.
Well, I'm collecting some interesting allies here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just so we have an accurate record, Representative Nolan and Representative Schaffler vote nay.
And
to revenue.
And Representative Hicks.
And Representative Hicks. Thank you.
All right. Moving along.
Yep.
Open a work session on House Bill 3615.
Chairs and members of the committee, House Bill 3615 was previously heard just yesterday. There is not yet a revenue impact statement. A fiscal statement has issued. It has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. This is the bill which authorizes establishment of regional definitions of agricultural land and forest land. This is the pilot project previously described yesterday for the three counties, Josephine, Douglas, and I'm not remembering the third, Jackson, Josephine, and Douglas, to pursue regional definitions of those lands.
And there's no amendment.
There was a dash one amendment.
Dash one.
It was received just yesterday and testified to, but
has to be put in.
But it has not yet been adopted into the measure.
Chair, move the dash ones in House Bill 3615.
Co-Chair Barker has moved the dash one amendments into House Bill 3615. Discussion on the amendment.
Yeah.
Objections? Not the amendments.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 3615 to the floor to do pass.
Ways and Means.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3615 to the Ways and Means.
Okay. Co-Chair Barker has moved House Bill 3615 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee. Any discussion on the bill?
There will be a no on this.
Okay. Any other objections, comments? Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Shoffler.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
No.
Representative Wong. Aye. Representative Woodman. Aye. Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair
Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair
Barker.
Aye.
Okay. House Bill 3615 is
a
amendment moved
down
to Ways and Means.
2612.
That backfired.
You're sending it to Ways and Means.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
down to Ways and Means. I got it now.
And the one above it, 3259.
Yeah, we got to go back to that.
There's an amendment for 2712.
Okay, we'll open a House work session on House Bill 2712.
Chairs and members of the committee, House Bill 2712 was previously heard on February the 22nd. This is the companion to 2710. 2710 was the civil court fines restructuring, and 2712 is the criminal fines, court fines restructuring. It has both dash 1 and dash 2 amendments. The dash 1 amendment restores prioritization language, also restores court discretion. It lowers the fines for traffic tickets. It adds $5 to traffic tickets for court facilities, and it makes the effective date January 1st of 2012. The dash 2 amendment was, I believe, 4 technical changes that were suggested by Public Defense Services that had a financial impact that was unintended. That's what I'm assured, although we haven't received testimony as to those. This bill has got permission to add a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. As it stands right now, there is a fiscal impact statement issued on the dash 2s, and I believe only a no revenue statement issued on the dash 1s. No, I'm sorry, it's fiscal statements on both the dash 1s and dash 2s. In any event, the financial statements are not yet complete, but you all have suspended the rules for movement.
Yeah, they'll take care of it. Ways and Means. You want to move it to
that's correct. Fiscal statements have issued on the dash 1 and on the dash 2. No revenue.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2712.
Co-Chair Barker, move the dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2712. Any discussion on the amendments? Objections?
I just have a quick question. So this is the result of a work group, and the Chief Justice all on board. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wong, I've not had the discussion with the Chief regarding this. OJD was part of the work group and helped us craft the direction where we were going with this. The idea and the intent, two major things that this did with where we've gone with 2712 was we took a portion of what House Bill 3040 did, which was return discretion back to the courts during the 03 level. And then we also recalculated the minimum mandatory fines from Class A through D for the traffic infractions or infraction-type violations.
And I do have the Chief Justice coming to my office for a lunch here in a day or two. We're going to go over this and some other issues.
Thank you. I just wanted to
any
confirm
other discussion
that. Thank
on
you.
It? Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm out of respect to my colleagues and all the good people that have done all this work on this bill. There's a lot going on in here, and I don't know what's going to come out of Ways and Means, so I'll move to Ways and Means, but that's all I'm doing today. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to returning judicial discretion, there's likely to be a battle of the economists out there, but I do just want to emphasize this committee has received ample and very compelling evidence, I think, that returning the discretion will have, in fact, an economic benefit in terms of revenue to the state. I think it'll have a positive ultimate revenue impact. And so I do just want to emphasize, now that we're at the passing point of this bill, that was presented in data form to this committee along the way. Thank you.
Further? Okay, the dash ones are in.
Mr. Chair, move the dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2712.
Representative Barker has moved the dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2712. Any discussion on those amendments or objections? They're in.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say one thing, and I would like to thank Representative Olson for all the hard work he's put in on trying to bring sense out of this bill. He's done quite a bit of work.
above and beyond the call, and I appreciate it.
There was a lot of work that was done on this bill and 2710 with Representative Garrett. I know he was somewhat frustrated. I like to see him that way. But he enjoyed it, I think, learned something from it.
And it's all cost. We like to see other people work. That's the bottom line of that. So.
Okay. Any other objections or discussion on the amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2712 as amended to the Ways and Means.
Chair Barker has moved House Bill 2712 as amended to Ways and Means. Any more discussion on the bill? Representative Tomei.
Thank you. Just briefly, we had some testimony in February from Gretchen Bennett from the Network of Child Abuse and Intervention Centers and also from the Women's Crisis Centers. They were concerned about losing the dedicated funds that they get from fines, and I just want to call that to the committee's attention. I'm sure that will be dealt with in Ways and Means also.
I believe the work group on both of these bills dealt with those issues. So, and then
after
Ways
their testimony
means,
in February?
Yeah.
Is that true?
Chair,
after February?
Members of the committee, Representative Tomei.
In a work group.
Prioritization language was restored at the request of those groups. They may not be completely satisfied with the amounts that are still being discussed, but they are getting a fixed distribution that is intended to make them keep them whole.
Great.
And the language was reinstated as part of the smaller work group process.
Good.
The -1 amendment.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Representative.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative
Schaffler. Aye. Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Representative
Wilson. Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger.
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
Okay, House Bill 2712 as amended moved to the floor. I mean, excuse me, to the Ways and Means. On House Bill 3259.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3259, you have the -7 amendments in front of you. The bill originally comes from Representative Barker. Basically, what it does permits the Department of Transportation to release driver's license photographs to licensed private investigators. Chair, members of the committee, I think it would be best if we walked through the amendment. I know this is the sixth amendment. Drew Johnson's been handling it, but he's out sick today. Go to page 5 of the bill, lines 19 through 26. The department shall disclose a photograph to a private investigator licensed by a licensing authority within the state of Oregon to be used in connection with any civil, criminal, or administrative proceeding, arbitration with any federal, state, or local court, or any agency or arbitration before any self-regulatory body, including the service of process, investigation, anticipation, litigation, and the execution, enforcement, and judgments and orders are pursuant to an order of federal, state, or local court. Mr. Chairman of the committee, it then says it puts restrictions on this. A licensed private investigator, the information that must prove to the department that the person has a corporate surety bond. That's at the bottom of page 5, lines 27 through 30. And then going over to page 7, lines 7 through 8, it says a private investigator who receives a photograph may use the photograph only for the purposes described in 802.179, which I believe was the last section, and may not resell or redisclose the photograph. Then going down to section 3, nothing in this in RS 802.175 to 802.187 authorizes disclosure by the Department of Transportation of personal information or of a photograph that is barred from disclosure. Then going to section 5, a person aggrieved by intentional violation may bring an action at law against a person who has knowingly obtained or used personal information or a photograph. Chair, just finishing up on the last page, any person who uses or obtains personal information or a photograph subjects the state of Oregon to any liability or claim shall indemnify or hold harmless the state. And then finally in Section 6, the Department of Transportation shall retain a duplicate image of each photograph, et cetera. The duplicate may not be made available to anyone other than the law enforcement officials or employees of the department acting in any official capacity, and a private investigator as provided under ORS 802.179. Mr. Chair, members, those are the amendments. I think I'm surmising that through this process there were limitations and restrictions put upon the use of a photograph by a private investigator.
Okay, committee, any questions about the amendments before we move?
Are we looking only at the dash 6 amendment?
Dash 7, Mr. Dash Chairman. Seven. Of the committee.
Tomei, do you need a little time to...
Well, I'm just trying to understand how it differed, because I was watching, reading through dash 6. I'm just curious, how does the dash 6 differ from the dash 7, or the vice versa?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Tomei, I can't answer that question. I'm not the original staff person on the bill.
Okay.
Johnson
okay.
is out sick today. What I did do is go through
here.
The dash
there
7.
We have ODOT. Can you come up, please, and tell us the difference between the two? You know...
Chair Krieger, Chair Barker, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, DMV, chairs and Representative Tomei. The difference between the dash 6 and the dash 7 was the removal from the dash 6 of the ability of a person to get their own photograph back from the DMV. And as strange as that may seem, that be a limitation, that actually much of this amendment and bill has to do with getting this provision to marry up with the federal restrictions on release of a photograph. And for a photograph, as well as some other highly restricted information under the federal law, the DMV is not to re-release a photograph back to an individual. It wasn't the point of the bill originally. It just kind of got stuck in the amendment process. And so from the 6 to the 7, that was just pulled out.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 7 amendments in House Bill 3259. Chair Barker has moved the dash 7 amendments in House Bill 3259. Any further discussion on the amendments?
You okay? Okay. Mr. Chairman of the committee, we don't have a fiscal on this bill yesterday. It's in progress, so you may want to roll the bill over just for those purposes.
Would there be any reason? This was not one of the bills that we had on our list that we would move without a fiscal. We had permission to.
Mr. Chairman of the committee, I don't know if there's a procedural issue, too. I was not in the meeting early. He may have rolled this bill over. And I see the clerk of the House here, and it may be very well on that issue. So to err on the side of caution, maybe it's best that it be.
Okay, it is on the list to move.
I know.
Without that. So why would we not move it? We've moved all the other bills.
I wasn't here earlier. Did you roll this bill over until tomorrow?
No. We suspended the list.
You did not.
Okay.
Then you're right. It is on the list.
And it is on the list.
But could we stand at ease for a second?
Stand at ease.
Back to order.
Have to do right away. 2712 have to do right away.
We have a possible problem with 3215, so we're going to close the work session on for now, 3259, and carry it over till our evening meeting at 5:15. And we're going to recess the committee now until 5:15.